welcome everyone to another episode of the Conscious Junkie podcast show. I feel so honored and excited to introduce today's guest. She's beautiful, little, born and raised in Australia, and she's only 26 years old, but extremely knowledgeable, passionate and professional if it comes to yoga and teaching. She is open, a great listener, and she inspires others, including myself, with her feminine grace and slow pace. Ty Fielding, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Lottie.
I had to giggle when I was writing this introduction down, feminine grace and slow pace, because
it's very fitting.
So fitting. It's almost too fitting.
I feel like we're a little bit late in even recording this, just to just to prove a point.
But it's very true. Yeah, no. But yeah, I'm super excited to have you on the show, and also to have you to share about some things that are actually really important. And we're going to talk about the breath, and I think it's the most important thing in life, because no breath, no life.
Yeah.
And what I also wanted to add, I forgot it in the introduction, but you've got this beautiful gift to wrap language about things that are pretty undescribable. So I've gone to a couple of your lectures and classes, and it was just so nice, like things that at first might sound complicated, or I've read about it, and then you explained it, and I was like, aha, I had so many aha moments, and I was like, oh, that's so nice. You know, sometimes when you go to a place and you hear a lot of things, and then in the end you just understand less than you did before. And then now I was like, oh, so many aha moments.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's down to me being a slow learner and having a very big imagination. And so when I'm trying to put my thoughts around it, I guess that's how I teach as well. I teach a little bit from my imagination and how I
interpret it. Yeah, you use these examples. Yeah, but it works. For people like me, it really works, because sometimes people who also know a lot, they tend to make things more complicated because they want to add more and more and more to it. But then I get really confused and lost. And this was like, oh, putting some nice examples there, which make things just more clear for me.
That's so cool. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. So before we dive into everything to do with the breath, there are just some questions that I want to ask you before, and where are we now?
We are in my bedroom in Sri Lanka, South Sri Lanka, in a little village called Talala.
Yes,
a little haven.
It is a little bubble, the Talala bubble.
The Talala bubble of palm trees and yoga.
Yeah, super nice. And I came here as a karma yogi and to help out with teaching for the surfers.
Yeah, and it's been an absolute blessing. Thank you. World's most helpful, friendly woman I think I've met.
Thank you, but I can't describe how special this place feels for me, and to just see how everyone involved is so caring and loving and really has such great intentions, and that just gives this place, it is not just beautiful, but the feeling is just so strong and beautiful of people who come here, and it's just so precious.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I'm so happy that you got me here and that, yeah, we can share all of this. Now, of course, yoga is what brought us together.
Yes.
And what does yoga mean to you?
Good question, Lottie. How do I answer this? Yoga for me is, it's just the tool to life. I really think that yoga has been this tool that I've been so lucky to be able to come in contact with, that allows me to understand so much more about the actions of being human.
Mm-hmm,
and
yes.
Just it's absolutely amazing how much it's transformed my understanding of self and life. And I suppose yoga for me is like that friend that is always there for you and is always pulling you back into that space of understanding, you know, these reactions and these feelings that you get that sometimes feel so overwhelming and so hopeless, that it's really nothing to do with you. It's all just perception. And yoga is that friendly reminder to bring you back in towards the source and back in towards your purpose.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah. And when did you first start your practice?
So I've been practicing yoga for quite a while. Well, when I say practicing yoga, I think I've told you this before. I had an asana practice and I had a meditation practice. And never in that journey did I think that they were both yoga. I thought that yoga was positions and moving and mm-hmm. going to slightly boring stretching classes.
Yeah, like many people do still think.
Yes, yeah. Completely. And mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. My mum was always very into yoga and I loved hanging out with mum, and she's also very into meditation. So I'd go to the Buddhist meditation center that she would go to, and I'd also go to the little mm-hmm. community of yoga practice as well, which was mainly older women and so my mum's age of women. And
sorry, mum.
Which seemed old at the time. Mum, you're youthful. You're looking good.
I met her.
But and I used to practice yoga, just more so as a tool to look after my body, and I had a lot of things going on with my mind when I was younger as mm-hmm. well. And it was, a lot of people would suggest go do yoga, and so I went and did yoga and I liked it. I found it a little boring. But then when I was in India, so South India in Kerala.
So how old were you when you started to practice, like for
As a teenager?
Yeah. Yeah.
So probably 14.
All right. Yeah. Oh, that's young.
It's pretty young. Now that I'm around more people, it usually is something that I think that's changing now for sure, which is very special. But I feel very lucky that I was introduced at a young age.
Quite young. And when did you go to India then?
So the first time I went to India was in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a yoga class and it changed me. It was one of those classes where it was honestly probably my first proper yoga class. I say proper yoga class, it was taught by this tiny little old Indian man with...
Where was this?
In Kerala.
Oh yeah.
And by the end of it, like, it was my first time practicing pranayama, and that was just so magnificent. I can't even, honestly, even just thinking about it now, it was like nothing I've ever tried before. It was the first time I've tried Kapalabhati, and then going in towards the postures after doing these breathing exercises, I was like, whoa, like everything is so simple and so easy. And then by the end of it, and even just doing sun salutations connected to the breath, I think that was probably
the first time really doing all this together.
Yeah, and by the end I was just crying, fully crying, which I'm sure you've had these classes as well. I was with my mum, and we went and got a juice afterwards, and I remember saying to her, I need to work out what happened then, and I need to teach it to other people. And that was sort of like my
first inspiration. Yoga class.
Yeah.
When it all like sort of connected for yourself.
Yeah.
You had little bits and pieces and you experienced
like
some of the tools, but you never really got the full experience.
Yeah, the full experience. Yeah. And then as soon as I got home from that, I booked my next trip to India to do my teacher training.
Yeah.
So I was like, I need to work out what this is.
Yeah, I need more of that. And that's so cool. But because I think no matter what brings you to the mat, it doesn't matter if it's the physical aspect, if it's the meditation, if it's the calm, the peace, the quiet, it's fine.
Yeah.
But at some point you will sense this, it's hard to explain.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Yeah, it's so cool.
It's exceptionally cool.
Yeah. But then you're so excited that you just want the whole world to feel that way.
Yeah.
All your friends who are maybe not so much into yoga. That's what I experienced, like coming home, like, everyone should do this every damn day.
It sort of makes you frustrated that not everyone knows about it or is exposed to it.
That's
like, this is just magic. Imagine if the whole world was able to feel like that.
Yeah. And especially now when I find myself, I don't know, agitated or in a bad place, I think like, holy shit, what if I didn't have those tools of just knowing how to breathe, or just, I'm not sure where I would be. It's just, you can't believe that you ever lived differently.
Yeah, completely. Yeah.
And you feel bad for people who like in a place and it's just such a life, a game changer.
It is life.
It is life.
Yoga is life.
Yoga is life. Oh, cool. All right. And so you're teaching a lot here and you work a lot, at least from what I see. But do you have your own little precious morning ritual?
I certainly do. So our classes here at Tallala are genuinely, generally and genuinely at 7:30 in the morning. Some classes are slightly earlier, but I will wake up at 5 a.m. every day and I'll have my little sacred practice, my sadhana beforehand, and I need it. I was actually saying to my boyfriend today, because I slept in because I was going to do one of the other teachers' classes, so I slept in till, God forbid, 7:30, and 6:30, and to do the 7:30 class, and just walking down to the hotel even, I was like, whoa, I haven't experienced this feeling. So usually before teaching, I'll do a meditation and an asana practice as well, and pranayama involved with that as well.
Mm-mm.
And it's just every single day I need to do this. And
so you just felt weird walking to the retreat with not having done your practice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do it every single day?
Every single day.
Yeah.
And if I miss it for whatever reason, I'll have to. It's just...
It's part of you.
It's just part of... Yeah. Mm. And it's so special. It's not always... You know, it's not always so much focused on the asana, but always I will need time for... Even just a little bit of, even if it's just pranayama meditation and a few sun salutations, that's...
It's more about setting you up for the day rather than, like a full physical practice or a vinyasa or...
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, it's...
Cool. And did it take you long to really turn this practice into a dedicated morning routine? Because I struggle a little bit. I have my morning routines.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate it. And then sometimes I just get in and out of it, especially when I travel. Yeah, you don't travel so much.
Yes.
It's pretty tough to keep it up.
See, I think that I'm a bit of an obsessive person. And when I'm really into something, because, you know, I think a lot of people wouldn't realize this about me because I am very easygoing with most things in my life. But then when I decide that I really like something or it really feels good, it does turn into
your anchor.
You my anchor,
that. And
yeah.
then you can flow around that, but that needs to be rock solid. Yeah.
And it's, I honestly, I remember my first self-practice was when I was doing my 200-hour teacher training in Rishikesh. And on Sundays, we didn't have school. We didn't have our practices and our lectures. And so I'd go to the rooftop. And our teacher basically told us, if you want to be a disciple of yoga, you must practice this every single day. And that's, you know, that's your ritual and that's your gift to yourself. And so I remember my first self-practice and I was like, how am I going to last 90 minutes without a teacher guiding me? Or in the case of that moment, these really strict Indian teachers yelling at me and hitting me with a yoga strap, which I loved. Love some tough love.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling so exceptional afterwards and just feel so proud of myself afterwards. And I was like, this is something that I want to continue. And, you know, life happens and sometimes it is a very small practice, but I think it's just like knowing how much better I will feel afterwards or knowing that this is, you know, like I said before, it is that friend that looks after you and helps heal you and understand you. And so I think when you start to almost put it in a relationship with yourself, it's much easier to stay connected to.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so you're pretty lucky that your boyfriend is a surf coach. He leaves the house early because you have one room.
I know, it's so good.
It's so good.
When he's not coaching, I'm like, oh, damn it. I'm like sitting at the end of the bed doing Kapalabhati and he's like,
yeah.
You're right there. No, he's actually really patient with me.
Yeah. But it's nice to have the space for yourself, right, when you do that. But it's nice that you can also, when you have to, like that one time a week.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. He never tries to talk you out of it. Hi, shall we go for breakfast?
He's so supportive. Oh, it's really lovely. Sweet. And even though, you know, Andrew Waddell quite well. And I've convinced him to practice, when I say practice yoga, this was after we did the 108 sun salutations.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, my muscles are so sore from doing 108 sun salutations. And he asked me what a sun salutation is, and so I did it with him just before we were going out for breakfast one day, and he did three, and he was just like, oh my gosh, this is so hard. Like, how do you do this every day? But he was very proud of himself, and so now he tells everyone that he has practiced yoga before.
That's good. That's a beginning.
Yeah, I think he did 3 sun salutation, Surya Namaskar A and 2 Surya Namaskar C, and so. And then
wonderful.
1 yin practice lying in bed after he was like really sore after a surf, and that's as far as I've gotten him yet.
But it's good. And you're patient with that?
I'm patient with that. He's very accepting of all the weird things that I do, all of my all my weird little rituals, and he allows me to burn most of my my incense.
It smells funny here. No, it smells really nice. Oh, but that's very important.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard to find. Like, if you feel this under judgment or like, oh, it's not nice, and then it's also nice from you that you are happy with what there is, like acceptance in what you do, and you don't try to push it into his stomach. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Oh, that's nice, Ty. Now, let me think. Oh, I want to talk, of course, about pranayama.
Mm-mm.
And at Talala, we've been doing pranayama for surfers because there's the great combination of surf and yoga. I think it's such a good retreat.
Mm.
I think all the surfers should do surf and yoga.
Me too.
Why do you think they should do it? Just for you guys out there who are into surf or into yoga, the combination is just spot on.
Completely. And for both, I think that's so cool about the Talala Surf and Yoga Camp as well, is that a lot of the time it's you know, I'm being a little bit generalizing here, but a lot of the time it's the guys that love surfing but maybe have never practiced yoga, and then the girls that love yoga but have never really surfed and maybe have been a little bit scared to surf. And so it's pretty sweet that we get to see it from both sides of the scale. And they just go hand in hand. It really is. It's like whatever you're experiencing on the mat really does prepare you for the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And the ocean, I think, is when you're pushed in towards this state of absolute meditation, because, you know, it's a strong element, the ocean.
There's no way not to be present or you're
gone. You're wiped off.
Yeah.
And it's such a beautiful practice. And I guess the way that we're running our the surf and yoga retreat as well, it's mostly restorative because they surf so much and really activate that yin. That yang, and so they come back for the yin to get the length and the space back into the bodies. But even just the principles of, you know, Padabandha and engaging the arch of the foot and using the bandhas when you're surfing or breathing when you're paddling or when you get knocked off, how to recover from that as well. And that is just, it's really practice in action.
Yeah,
you
it
can't
is.
Really deny
how
much it helps
them. And I think they all see that by the end of the week.
It's so
they're
magic.
So grateful every week again. Yeah, it's super nice to see.
Yeah, and I think too, like, people that are in the environment, you know, you're literally plonked in an ocean, you're surrounded by Mother Nature, and you just start, like, this is why me and my boyfriend work so well, even though he doesn't technically practice yoga. He does in many ways, and he's just got this beautiful mindset of, you know, he's around, he loves the world, he loves the ocean, he really listens and knows so much about the energy of the ocean because it affects the way the waves move. And he's in this sincere space of meditation when he's out there. And I think that's really, even for the beginners, in, you know, doing level one whitewash for the first few days, they're so focused in this natural state of being. You know, we're not around big buildings here in Sri Lanka as it is, but really just being in the ocean. And you cannot have your mobile phone on you when you're in the ocean.
Nope.
Or it will be broken.
Yeah, that's
so
true. Yeah,
it's really even just that, like the digital detox and being back in the space of the world. And I guess we're all like the element of ocean. It's been said that this is quite a selfish element to worship, because we are such highly we're so highly created by water, and so we really can relate to this source.
Mm-mm.
And even that in itself, it's bringing us back in towards the source of self, which is
true.
Yoga as well.
Can you imagine people coming from London or from crazy as big cities and then they're here for a week? I think I'm proud of all of them also, because they've immersed themselves into a week like of new experiences. It's super cool, and they just
so
do
great.
It they just it's so nice. It's like
And you can see them evolve as well.
Yeah.
I call this the paradising effect.
Mm-hmm.
Paradising effect. Like, they start off the week and maybe they're a little, you know,
holding
stiff
back
and unsure. And then by the end of it, they're just like, Big smiles, a little bit more tanned, crazy hair.
Yeah, and I feel so fulfilled what I've done this week. They could have sit on the beach with a cocktail and then you return home like nothing happened. But this sometimes it feels like it's the beginning of something new.
Yeah.
Like the things they learn here and experience, they just take it home.
Yeah.
And that is super cool. And I think when yoga complements the surf, they start to realize more of what happens in the ocean as well.
Yeah.
Like they realize, oh, they've been in some sort of flow state, and it all connects and comes together. And it brings us to the breath, because that's something I really would like to hear you share about. Also because, I mean, obviously for surfing it's important, and also we learn how not to breathe.
Yes.
But also in day-to-day life, how important is the breath?
Oh my God, it's literally life.
It's literally
breath
life.
Breath is life. If we want to survive in this human form, we must breathe.
We must,
And it's just the thing that really gets... it's quite comical how much it gets neglected, because it is, you know, the things that we focus on so highly is, it's so much of this consumerism and making our life better with this and that, when really it's the breath that controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like the ancient yogis, the rishis from thousands and thousands of years ago realized that this is the source that they're able to control everything with.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I think back of before I started practicing yoga, I think it's 4 years ago, I now reflect and I often just breathe in my chest, like really, and I felt stressed, but I had no clue that I could actually change it.
Yeah.
It was just something I observed and it didn't feel pleasant, but I just thought that it was like that.
Yeah.
So that's something which really scares me, because I think I still had quite of an okay job. I just really liked it and it soaked me up a little bit, but it was not even to a crazy extent. But now in today's world, so many people struggle with so much stress and they just breathe terrible.
It's so... You can really tell a lot about a person from the way they're breathing.
I know, but only now I start to... I was listening to another podcast and then I heard this lady and she was so excited, but I felt so bad for her, because she was like I heard her constantly breathing in through the mouth, and I was like, lady, I wanted to call her, like, girl, please take a breath, this use destroys you. Yes. And it also brings me back to your slow paced diet, because I started to learn how to breathe. But still, sometimes life just gets in the way and I'm back to that shallow breathing. But now at least I know what tools I can use to get out of that.
Yeah. But well, this is so cute, because I think this is how we first met. It was when I was doing Panchakarma, so I was even slower than normal.
Yeah.
Slow person gets even slower. And we were doing a pranayama course together.
Yeah, that's right.
You're in training for the surf and yoga.
Yeah.
Memory lane.
It was very slow. But like right from that moment, I'm not sure if it was that exact moment, but at some point I was walking behind you and here I come, like bum 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 bum, and then Ty was walking in front and she was like fluttering, and I was like, oh yeah, I might as well slow down, I don't really need to rush, you know.
But it really sucks when you're behind me in the buffet line. I think that's when
I just go around. I stop giving a fuck. I just go around and I just...
I've had some really like funny looks sometimes, like particularly after yoga or teaching, and I'm just like, oh, life's so good. Look at this doll. Slowly like taking doll by doll on the plate.
And the people around you going furious.
Come on, woman.
Get yourself some doll. But... I mean, for some people, it's very difficult. I mean, it's not easy to just, when someone says, change your life, like change the pace of your life. Mm-hmm. It seems impossible.
Yeah.
But now, something that you can do in order to change your life is to change your breath.
To breathe different.
Yeah.
Exactly. It seems so obvious.
Yeah.
And so simple. And it is simple in theory. But then when it comes to the practice, it's challenging, because we're humans, we're habitual creatures, we're going to be doing what we've been doing for most of our life.
That's right.
Because it feels comfortable, it tricks our body. Our body is confused and thinks that this is the way it likes to move, or the way it likes to breathe. And even when you start, and you would have definitely seen this with with your students as well, when you first start to teach people how to, you know, breathe, which is the most beneficial way for their bodies, mm-hmm. it's uncomfortable. It's mm-hmm. really challenging and it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Kumbhaka is just like, oh, this is horrible. I feel like I'm suffocating.
Yeah.
And it's really great when people are able to push past that and just keep that practice going.
Yeah.
Because that's when the benefits come in. And the more you start to create this in that almost that artificial time, you know, the time of breath practice.
Yeah.
The more of that you start to incorporate, the more that starts to seep into everyday life. I always like to tell my students, like, 5 minutes. 5 minutes is absolutely nothing, particularly when you're doing pranayama practice.
Mm-hmm.
But if it just begins with 5 minutes, then maybe 10 minutes and 15 minutes, that is a big chunk of change, because it's going to accidentally spread in towards your everyday life as
well. Yeah, that's true. Just becoming conscious of the breath is already such a game changer for people.
Oh.
Like, oh, let's breathe in, or just let's deepen the exhalation just a little bit. See what happens. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so true. And I actually think that in that theory of the topic of pranayama, just mm-hmm. being what you said, conscious. Being conscious of the way you breathe, that then allows you to be conscious of the way you move. And if you think about the mind, that's probably the thing that stuffs us up the most, mm-hmm. being humans.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%.
it always would baffle me. Even when I was a little kid, I remember being so confused by the concept of butterflies, you know, when you get nervous and all of a sudden it's like one thing happens, a thought happens. Or I used to do a lot of public speaking when I was little, like in primary school, and I would get so nervous and all of a sudden I'd feel sick and sometimes I'd even need to vomit, and it just would make me feel so confused as to this thought or this feeling, simply through knowing that I had to say this speech that I've been working on, would make me feel physically sick. And that would always confuse me as a little kid, being like, how can your mind control that and then make me physically sick? Like, does this mean I'm faking it? I remember being really confused by that
mm-hmm.
that process. But it's just that, what did they say? Like, it's 70% of your mind with every sickness. And it's just, if you use the breath to then control the mind,
mm-hmm.
then so much healing has already happened.
Definitely. And it's funny to see sometimes people who just come to the practice or who just experience this pranayama practice, you see them struggling so much, and you see almost how their mind is fighting the practice. They don't want to, sort of, because they know they're so used to their fast pace of living that they sort of want to deny that it should be differently.
Yes.
So then you really see them struggling with the pranayama, or when you say, like, oh, anulom vilom for 5 minutes, and you see them like thinking, what the fuck? I've got better stuff to do mm-hmm. with my time.
Yep.
But then if you keep up the practice, holy shit, it's a life changer.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah. But I think already, like, what is your biggest piece of advice you would give to people who just find themselves breathing, like, most people don't know that they're only half breathers, but they just breathe in the chest. They forget how it is or how to even breathe deeply.
Yes, completely. And the diaphragm is very neglected.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, I think that every yoga teacher uses that cue, breathe down into your stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really foreign feeling for many people to breathe down into, you know, the deep part of their lung.
And then you see them think, how do I breathe in my stomach?
Yeah, how does my stomach breathe? Isn't that for digesting? Yes, you're right. It's a funny cue, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, and that, it's just, I think that this is, and it's a confusing thing. I remember myself when I was first learning that diaphragmatic breath and feeling, you know, the diaphragm activating and pulling
down. So what's the diaphragm, for those who don't know?
So the diaphragm is that fancy little, it's almost like camping equipment. It's packed very neatly in towards the lungs when it's at rest. And as you inhale, that muscle activates, pulls down. It essentially squashes the stomach mm-hmm. and the digestive area.
That's right. It seems that you're breathing into the belly.
Yeah, and it makes the belly push down, and so that we're ordered to find space in the thoracic body, and the lungs expand, the ribs expand, and it also starts to calm us down. It brings our body in towards that rest and repair.
That's it.
Stage, the parasympathetic breath.
Yes.
And I guess when we're doing our meditation, it is that feeling of almost getting a fat belly and then expanding in towards the lungs and the ribs. And as we're exhaling from the ribs and the belly. But when we come into that practice where we're still diaphragmatic breathing, we're still pulling the diaphragm down, but it's not in the sense that we're really expanding the space or the air within the body, because think, how are we supposed to bend? How are we supposed to move like that? But mm-hmm. we're doing it in such a way that we are activating the diaphragm and creating so much space. It's almost creating, in a sense, an energy lock, not going quite into the Uddiyana Bandha, but that energy force of the downward push and the upward expansion.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a very confusing thing.
Yeah.
I think for when people are first coming into that class, because we start the class and we're going into that expansion of the stomach and the chest, and then when it starts to come in towards the practice, it is changed more into an outward expansion than a bloating sensation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to express. I'm realizing doing this talking without, you know, I use my hands so much. How do you explain? Luckily that most of my students have their eyes open, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's very helpful. No, honestly, because if this concept is new for you, it's so hard to understand.
Yeah.
And if you've been doing it like wrong, I mean, it's, if you've been doing it like sort of this incomplete breathing, you just don't know differently.
Yeah.
So then tell someone they've been walking wrong. It's very difficult.
Completely. Yeah. And you know, I think, so there's a type of breathing technique that my teacher taught me, which is just changing. For the mind, it's so easy to start to understand. Can I maybe talk through this?
Mm-hmm.
So the best way to start to feel it is to put your... Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Put your hand on your belly and then your second hand just on the lower ribs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not on the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like around the floating ribs.
Yeah.
And inhale to the belly. So feel the diaphragm pull down and the belly expand wide. And then continue that inhalation into the lower lung only and expand the lower rib cage. But try and settle the belly, the chest. So don't breathe into the chest. And then exhale.
Don't breathe into the chest.
No, just the lower lung. And then exhale from the lower lung and down to the belly. And we're going to do that three times. Inhale to the belly, lower lung. Try and expand the back of the lower ribs. And then exhale. We'll do that one more time. Inhale to the belly, lower lung, expand lower ribs, even the back of the lower ribs, and exhale. Now you get the gift of breathing into your chest. So we inhale to the belly, the lower lung, and then the higher lung, expand the side of the ribs, and exhale from the higher lung, the lower lung, and the belly. And we'll do this three more times. The stomach, lower lung, higher lung, exhale, higher lung, the lower lung, and belly. Last one, belly, lower lung, higher lung, exhale, higher lung, lower lung, belly. And this is a really nice way when we take away that, you know, it's quite easy to breathe through the chest, as mm-hmm. you can ask any office worker.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's very challenging to breathe into the belly. And so mm-hmm. when we try to restrict that space of movement in the chest, we are forced to feel it.
It feels awkward at first.
It feels very awkward. And it starts to feel like, what is my lower lung? How am I supposed to fill up my lower lung without mm-hmm. filling up the higher lung?
Yeah.
And, you know, when we think about the breath as well, it isn't a liquid. So I think as yoga teachers, we like to sort of think of, let's pour a glass of, you know, breath into the body.
it doesn't
quite sit in the body the way water would sit in a cup, because, mm-hmm. you know, breath is a gas. But still using that visualization, and visualization is so much within our meditation and our understanding of pranayama mm-hmm. even. And just...
Yeah.
Imagining almost that this oxygen and energy is water, and filling it up, even if that's how we're doing it mentally, and that will change mm-hmm. the way that we expand and contract the muscles.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to visualize, like using an example, it just makes it easier to understand, because it is difficult if you don't know how to. So when it comes to feeling stressed and the sympathetic nervous system, what is the biggest problem in this world?
Yeah, stress, hey?
Yeah.
And I think that people, you know, there's a number of things that, what I always like to use this example, when we get startled.
Yeah.
You know, that gasp.
It's fright, yeah.
Yeah, when we get frightened, we usually gasp and then stop breathing. We hold the breath.
Yeah, muscles like...
The shoulders come up to the ears. We start breathing in towards our secondary respiratory system using our accessory breathing muscles like our pec muscles, our upper trapezium and the scalenes. Yeah.
Where's the tiger so I can run?
Yeah, exactly. And we're just triggering this fight or flight response.
Constantly. But not constantly. Of course, it's very beneficial if there is a tiger or if there is something you need to run
exactly.
for. I mean,
our body has this function for a reason. It's not just to make us stressed out.
You're ready to go. Like, blood is going to the muscles, to the heart. You're like ready to fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But then we're in that system all the time with our phones constantly triggering the fight and flight. We constantly feel this tension in our bodies, in our minds, and then we breathe shallow.
Yes.
And then we get sick.
And when we
all
think about how much energy it takes for our body, you know, our body will physically change when we're stressed. It will go exactly what you explained. Mm. Our breath will become very fast. Our eyes will become dilated. Yeah. Our blood pressure up. Yeah, blood literally moves away from our organs so that it's able to be protected if we are to get in a fight or an accident. And even though it's incredible that our body has this ability to do this, it's just overuse of energy and stimulation. And of course, all of that overstimulation and release of stress hormones, it makes us fatigued, exhausted.
And sick.
Sick and sad.
And sick. Yeah, it's terrible.
Stress is just... Man, we're lucky living here in Sri Lanka. I can't really remember what it's like living in... You know, of course, everyone has their stresses, and I think that's something to remember as well. As humans, we're going to be stressed, and if there isn't anything, you know, the whole first world problem thing, it's real. First world problems are still problems.
It's still problems. And we should not neglect them, because there are also other... No, definitely, it's so true.
Yeah, and it's almost when you're in a real state of... emergency, these people tend to be more resilient as well. And so it's a very interesting thing when we start to look at the breathing for people that do not have any life-threatening problems, so to say, in comparison to those that do, and just that the way of they are able to act in a different way, and maybe even more so for those of us that have, you know, that first world problem syndrome, it's hard to even acknowledge that this is a problem, that being stressed out for being late for work or having a deadline that we can't meet, that these are real problems, and they're causing so much stress for the body, and it is causing illness and sickness and, you know, anxiety, depression, all the rest of it. And it's definitely something that can be avoided.
That's like a massive epiphany I had here at Talala. Back home, I'm always so busy, but with things I love to do. I love to teach, and I just find myself flying around the country basically to go to one class and then to another. That sometimes that first breath at the yoga mat, I need it most myself. It's like, holy shit, okay, let me take a breath. But somehow it's really hard. Also, for me, it seems like my excitement get mixed up. It's very hard. Because I don't want to say no to things which I love doing. And then I come back from a journey. I've been traveling a lot over the past 5 years. So I'm away for a couple of months and then I come back. And it's like every time I try to sort of make some changes there. But it's still very hard. But now I'm going home soon. I feel like I now really have the tools to just shape a different routine and life for myself. I'm so aware, like being here just made me so aware of this, absolutely, of this madness back home. And I'm talking about myself, like putting way too much into one day. I just don't want to be there anymore. Even like teaching yoga, but then like, oh my goodness, not giving yourself space to breathe. But that epiphany just really came now, and I was like, oh my goodness, yes, my breath, it was like telling me all these things. And I should now really make some changes there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so important.
It's so important as a yoga teacher as well.
It's so important.
It's so easy to, well, it's not easy, but it's effortless for many yoga teachers to give this very helpful advice to other people.
Yeah.
But then when it actually comes to taking it himself, it's really challenging.
Yeah.
And life still gets in the way. And maybe you know these things, but it's really, really hard.
It's really hard.
To put it into practice.
Yeah. Like off the mat. On the mat, no problem. But then off the mat, you're like, hey. So now I'm like, okay, I feel actually challenged and excited to start doing it.
Yeah.
To really be aware and sort of let my breath guide me, because this place here, it gave me so much space to really get more in touch with my own physical sensations, and I'm like so aware of it, and I sleep so well, and all these things that now when I feel like that changes, even when I go to the big road, you know, I right away feel, because here it's like it's quiet and it's lonely small road, some tuk-tuk, some bicycles, and then when you go into the madness again, you start to feel all these things. They sort of they sort of right away give so much energy, and it changes you.
Yes, and I think that's such an interesting thing that yoga teaches us as well, without forever changing prakriti. You know, we're in this world of change.
Mm-hmm.
Our breath is a perfect example of this. And you can be sitting or walking around, driving your scooter, whatever, and feeling so peaceful. And then one thing changes and it literally puts you out. It can, you hear one piece of news, or you get a message, or, you know, somebody does something to you that isn't nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's as much as, you know, someone, you know, that you are all too familiar with the tuk-tuks here, so tuk-tuk swerving in your way and like almost knocking you off on your scooter and getting really scared and really frustrated and angry, and then all of a sudden it's like all of that yoga is out the door and you're furious or scared or whatever, and it's and that's our practice of yoga, and it's bringing it into life and using these tools that we learn on the mat to
in our day-to-day life,
back into that space of clarity and calm,
because
it always serves to be.
It does.
To be with your breath and to be calm.
And for me, it has been a great help falling asleep. Like activating that parasympathetic nervous system. You just feel yourself becoming more calm. I often went to bed when there was still so many things on my mind and I just could not sleep.
Yes.
But I didn't know there was, of course, you hear like, oh, reading is nice. But now I realize even when I start reading like a nice book, I start to feel that it changes. And I'm like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
And you sort of arrive into that, in that slow pace of feeling more calm or feeling more centered, and it's so helpful.
That's just
amazing.
The best sleep serum. It's very cool.
It's so cool. Dai, thank you so much for sharing a lot of things about the breath.
It's been so lovely hanging out with you.
You're sitting on your bed, buddy. It's nice and big, and there's an air conditioning. But wait, just before we stop, I just want to steer things up a little bit. So I normally in the podcast throw some questions at you which should be answered quickly.
Okay. Oh,
so these are pretty quick, random questions. But I think it's just so much fun because you you get to know all these new things about someone.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Okay, you ready for it?
I'm ready.
All right. Sun or moon?
Moon.
Calling or texting?
Calling.
Singing or dancing?
Oh, both. Dancing.
All right. Fries or ice?
Ice.
Funniest name you've ever heard?
Oh God, I don't know. Oh, I do know. Sorry, I'm taking a long time to answer this, but there was a brother and a sister called Ali and Lane.
No. Dogs?
Yes. No, a brother and sister, humans.
Oh.
From my primary school.
Oh, that's nice. Okay. No lies or white lies?
White lies.
Sleeping or dreaming?
Dreaming.
Favorite body part of yourself?
I love my toes.
Yeah.
They're so strong and cool. They let me do heaps of good things.
Shall we compare toes after the podcast?
They're not very,
you need to
stunning,
see my toes.
They're very functional.
This came from the bottom of your toe.
I'm going to say my whole foot. The feet are so helpful.
Oh my goodness, I love this. Okay, next one. Asana you hate most?
Oh, Utkatasana.
Yeah, okay. Asana you need most?
Utkatasana.
All right. Fair enough, yeah. Yoga pants or summer dresses?
Oh, look, I love the baggy yoga pants and summer dresses. Summer dresses.
Mm-mm. They look good on you, girl. That yellow one you wore the other day. Sweet.
I love dresses.
Yeah. Salt or sweets?
Salt.
All right.
100%.
Yeah? Oh, good for you. And, oh yeah, I got a few other funny ones. Oh yeah, book that changed your life.
Oh gosh, there's so many, I feel. The Yoga Sutras.
Yeah, all right.
Oh, I love the Yoga Sutras.
Makes perfect sense. Oh yeah, and this one is an interesting one. Unwritten Rules of Talala Crew.
The Unwritten Rules of Talala Crews. Play nice. I think everyone in our community is so awesome, and we all, you know, it's not in our contracts, but we all support each other so beautifully, and we're very, very lucky here.
Yeah. Play nice.
Yeah.
It's important.
Just be compassionate.
Yeah.
I think that's the main thing, and we're very lucky to have, to really have that as a part of our team.
It's precious.
Rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I think it's the unwritten rule of life, really. Compassion is everything. Loving kindness. Really.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the most funny question. Oh no, first another one. Meditation or asana?
Meditation.
And then, oh yeah, if you were arrested with no explanation, what would your friends and family think that you would have done?
Oh. Probably, I don't know, probably made a mockery of something or pretending that I was someone. I'm a big fan of putting on characters and voices, so they'd probably be like, oh yeah, she was trying to be someone else and think it was funny.
And then it was not, and then they would,
I thought I was going to get arrested the other day. Actually, I got pulled over for the first time on my scooter by a Sri Lankan cop.
For the first time in 3 years?
Mm-hmm. Holy. Well, I've only just started riding my scooter because I was scared for 2 years.
Oh, were you?
But I felt like a bit of a criminal. I got pulled over. I think it was just to have a chat.
Yeah. Did they let you pay something?
No, I think they just wanted to have a chat.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It was really funny. They asked me to sit down and they're like, oh, madame, you have to wait. And I was like, oh, goodness, what have I done? And then they just were like, okay, you can go now.
All right.
I had my surfboard strapped to my little scooter and they're like, oh, you're going for a surf? I was like, yeah, I was planning to. They're like, okay.
You go.
So that's it?
That's it.
Okay.
Oh, that's pretty sweet. They're not too bad here, eh?
No, I thought
I
for
really
sure
think
they
all right.
Something from me, but...
At least something. Like little money, nothing.
No.
Good karma, lady.
Yeah, I think it was good karma.
Yeah. All right, now before we close down, I've heard you singing in the streets. So I was just hoping to get a little mantra out of you. Or just your favorite song.
Okay, so I... Well, you know this enough now. You've lived with me for a little while, but I love anything Disney princess. I really love musicals and Disney. But my favorite mantra is the Lakshmi mantra. Yeah, I think I'm a bit shy to sing it.
Yeah. And a little Disney song. If I know it, I will sing along.
Well, my surfing song, I always have a whole new world in my... Actually, you know what? I either have A Whole New World from The Little Mermaid or Fat Bottom Girls from Prince. No, sorry, not from Prince, from Queen.
Both really nice.
Yeah, both are really good.
Mm. A little song.
A whole new world, don't you dare close your eyes. A new fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no, or where to go, or say we're only dreaming.
Oh, I love it! The best closing down of a podcast ever. Thank you.
Am I Disney
you
princess
just
on?
Collected the courage and then there you went. It's too bad that you cannot see it because this little girl like lighted up, hands up in the sky. It's incredible how much we use our arms and fingers and feet.
Hey, I feel like you're my soulmate for the hand gestures.
Here we go.
All the flies are staying away from us when we're having a chat, that's for sure.
Ty, thank you so much for just... yeah, just explaining and sharing a bit of your knowledge and of your great personality.
Thank you so much for having me, Maddie.
Thanks for letting me sit on your bed.
You are welcome. Thanks for finally sitting on my bed.
It's comfy.
It's a good mattress, hey?
Definitely. Thank you so much. I'm going to hug you and we're going to compare toes. And thank you so much for listening, guys. And I hope to see you again soon.